This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by PRMI, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
The left will always and forever just lie about guns. It's not that they're wrong when they're talking about guns. It's that they're lying. And I thought last night on the Tucker Carlson show, he had an amazing segment. If you haven't seen it, watch his opening monologue as he takes you through over and over and over again the lying that folks on the left engage in when it comes to guns. They're doing that because they want to ban guns, and thus they have to scare people who don't own guns, haven't decided that they want to ban guns, but they have a general concern about guns. Fear, which I get, by the way. I understand why people are scared about guns. Guns can be really, really scary, particularly when in the hands of the wrong people. And that's what we focus on the right. We want to keep guns out of the hands of bad guys. That's all we want to do. Good guys, you have the right to own a gun. Bad guys, we need to make sure you do not get those guns or misuse those guns. But folks on the left want to go after your guns. Your guns. The hunter. The person who uses it for self-defense. The person who goes over to a gun range and enjoys just shooting targets. They're interested in taking away your guns. When it comes to the bad guys on the streets, what do we see happening right now on the left? Trying to get rid of gun enhancement charges, meaning a bad guy is caught doing something illegal and has a gun. We're not allowed to add more time to that sentence, to that charge. I believe locally it was Roger Goodman, the state representative, who was trying to pass that. We know that in Los Angeles, their DA, Gascon, got rid of the enhancement charges. And yet, if you were to go shooting, if you are a individual who owns a weapon purely for self-defense, because you live in Tacoma, where you're seeing a surge in homicides, in drive-by shootings, they want to take away your gun. And to do that, they have to lie. They talk about all weapons of war. Americans shouldn't just have access to weapons of war. What weapon of war is out there? Weapons of war. What they don't tell you, the vast, vast, vast number of crimes committed in this country. And again, when we're talking about gun violence, we're mostly talking about not mass shootings. We are talking about gangbangers, gang members, usually taking out each other, sometimes taking out other innocent people. Using handguns. Handguns are often being used, not rifles, semi-automatic or otherwise. But weapons of war! We gotta stop people from having weapons of war! Cedric Richmond is a senior advisor to President Trump, and he was on with MSNBC today. And he's all about, like, the NRA is buying everyone off. That's the language of the left. They're just, people are hiding behind the Second Amendment. Hiding behind the Second Amendment.
Republicans and the NRA have hid behind the Second Amendment for far too long.
I want someone to say, you know what, Planned Parenthood have been hiding behind these so-called rights of abortion and abortion access for way too long. Oh, you know what? All those voters have been hiding behind the right to vote for way too long. Those people on the interwebs hiding behind the right to speech and expression way too long. Oh, those churchgoers. No, excuse me. Those mosque-goers hiding behind the right to religious expression for far too long. Something must be done. Keep them out of mosques. Keep them off of the internet. Keep them out of Planned Parenthood offices. No, of course, they don't talk like that. They only talk about that when it comes to the Second Amendment because they don't respect or care about the Second Amendment.
When the Second Amendment was written, people were stuffing gunpowder into a musket to shoot. And
okay, for Peyton, I want you to write down some notes.
Okay.
Because I'm about to school this idiot.
Fire away.
I see what you did there.
Oh, hey, look at that. Sometimes things just work out.
That was a pun. So, the argument that at the time they had muskets, not AR-15s, is not a really good argument to make when talking about the Second Amendment because, again, you do understand, first of all, at the time there actually were their versions of machine guns, slightly different, obviously, than today. But pushing that aside, the ones you were fighting also had muskets. Dummy? So when you say back then they had muskets, understand the people they were fighting against and the people they were protecting themselves from also had muskets. So that's just a dumb argument on its face, but using the logic. You know what didn't exist back then? The internet. Do we not have free speech rights as it relates to the internet, or can the government go ahead and punish us for some of our political positions online? That's his logical argument, except it lacks the logical part.
Now you have guns that can shoot 100 rounds in a minute, and that's just completely different. These are weapons of war.
No, they are not. Don't simply say these are weapons of war if you don't know what the hell it is you're talking about.
Weapons of mass destruction, they have no place in the streets of America.
Mass destruction.
And we have a president now who will call out all of those who oppose safe neighborhoods, safe streets, and stopping the carnage on the streets of America.
We oppose safe streets. Republicans oppose safe streets. Not the Democrats who egged on and encouraged and justified and rooted for months and months and months of destruction on our streets that led to the deaths of a whole bunch of innocent people. But it's us. We're thumbs up to all those drive-bys in Tacoma. The side that doesn't want to defund police, we're all about wanting carnage on the streets. The side that wants to take away police funding. The side that wants to put bad guys back out on the streets so that they're not staying behind prison wall. Like, yeah, they're the ones who... They've got our backs. Yeah, we got it. Thanks. Thanks, Cedric. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. When we come back, Rob McKenna is going to stop by on whether or not Seattle School Board President Chandra Hampson broke the law when she deleted critical comments on her Facebook page. We're going to get into that and so much more. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Legal.
Seattle School Board Director Chandra Hampson is taking some criticism from a lot of folks, thanks to the reporting I did over at KTTH.com and, of course, on Fox News. She has come out against any sweep of homeless encampments on campus or adjacent to campus, this being a safety issue impacting at least two schools. The video of my tour of Meany Middle School, which is completely surrounded by the homeless encampment of 40 to 50 tents, is available right now over at KTTH.com. Folks went on to her Facebook page to tell her that they were not pleased with her position, and she was deleting the comments. Some folks pointing out that as a public official, you can't exactly just delete comments like this. Well, can you or can't you? Because the law is a little bit confusing. So when we're confused about certain things, legally speaking, we invite on our favorite legal guest. Joining us on the line, former Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Good to be back.
So we know as a matter of fact that when you are using a official account from a government agency, you cannot censor individuals, generally speaking. If people are very clearly abusing it by posting pornography, for example, you can delete some of that stuff. What about in a case like Chandra Hampson, who claims she was simply using a personal account?
It doesn't matter that the account is personal, and it doesn't matter that it exists on a privately owned platform like Facebook, Twitter, or any of the rest. What matters is when and whether an elected official has created a public forum by intentionally opening their social media account for public discussion. That's the test the court is going to apply.
So how would that test then be applied in this case with Chandra Hampson? Her Facebook page, and by the way, the latest is, as of last night, she took the entire Facebook page down. But before that, it was labeled Director Chandra Hampson. It was listed as politician as far as its category. And she very clearly was using it to post some items directly related to her work as the president of the Seattle School Board, including putting out a joint statement with another school board president on policy. Would that be counted here? Would that hit a bar?
I think that using the account in that way would likely be viewed as, you know, creating a public forum. The way that the courts are going to analyze a First Amendment claim concerning a social media account is, you know, how does the owner of the account use it? Do they use it to make official pronouncements? Do they use it to reply to other people's messages, to republish other people's messages about things they have posted regarding their official role and the agency they work for? If so, there's a very good argument that that page, that social media account, has become a public forum, and therefore you cannot, as the owner of that forum, of that page, who's a public official or any government official, elected or not, you know, censor, you know, some of the views that are posted there. You're not allowed to block or delete messages others have posted because that infringes their First Amendment rights in that public forum.
Would it matter if the people who are commenting are not direct constituents?
No, not at all. All that matters is that they have First Amendment rights, and they're exercising those by engaging in a dialogue, not just with the school board member in this case, but also with each other. As the court in the Second Circuit held in the famous case involving President Trump, blocking people on the @RealDonaldTrump Twitter account. Excluding some users because the official doesn't like their speech, disfavors it because it criticizes him and his policies. That's viewpoint discrimination. So excluding them from that public forum, I'm quoting now from the opinion, by burdening their ability to converse on social media platforms with others, is a First Amendment violation.
Just joining us, we're talking with former Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna about a decision made by Seattle School Board President Chandra Hampson to delete comments on her Facebook page that were criticizing her. And she acknowledged that she was doing this. The argument that she made on Facebook before she took the page entirely down was that this was her personal page and that she's able to do this. She also cited that she will, some of the language was, I'll do this because some of these people are not any of my constituents. Now, I have since reached out to Chandra Hampson asking her some questions about why she thought it was legally permissible to do this and some other questions related, and all she did was respond with a link to a CNN story titled "Supreme Court Wipes Away Ruling That Said Trump Violated Constitution by Blocking Twitter Followers." Is she right to use this as an excuse as to why she thinks that's a legal sort of reason for her to be able to do this?
No, not at all. She's referring to the Supreme Court's dismissal of the case brought by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University against President Trump over his decision to block some users from his Twitter account. When he lost the election and then left office, the court dismissed the case because he's no longer in office. Therefore, his account is no longer a public forum. And it vacated the Second Circuit ruling as well. And that's the case that has the details and that lays out the law here. However, that Second Amendment decision in Knight First Amendment Institute is not the only federal case out there. There are a number of federal cases where judges, courts have held that public officials who use their social media accounts for public business and invite public discourse on them have turned them into public forums. So, the Second Amendment, the Second Circuit case is not the only case out there. It's not the only authority.
So what would people then look to as the authority, if you will? If the Supreme Court has not necessarily ruled, where then would you go to say, in your guidance to, you know, politicians out there, this is why you should be following these rules?
Well, I would look to decisions in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, if we're talking about politicians in the Ninth Circuit, which is the entire West Coast and more. Decisions in other circuits aren't binding on courts in this circuit. But more than that, I would just look at the reasoning in these decisions, because the reasoning is likely to be adopted by courts throughout the land. Not guaranteed, and it is very fact-intensive. But it's also easy to understand how a decision by an elected official who lives in the Western District of Washington or lives in the Ninth Circuit, could result in litigation that produces this kind of result. So I haven't looked for every case on this topic and don't know if there are cases on point in the Ninth Circuit. But if there aren't now, they're likely to be in the future.
So there you go. It seems fairly cut and dry. The only question I think some people would have is there any reasonable reason why someone could, in fact, kick someone off? And I gave the example of like someone violating the law or posting pornography. In certain cases, obviously, right, people can control others so that, they're using the Internet for their version of the heckler's veto. Under what circumstances could you, in fact, block someone?
Well, if you have posts from members of the public that violate the policy of the social media platform, that would be a basis. That would certainly cover pornography or violent threats. So I think there are boundaries. But if people are posting simply to express their views about policy issues and the positions taken by the elected official, I don't see how there's any excuse for deleting those. If the elected official has chosen to use their social media account for, official business, for pronouncements, to share policy, to invite views, you don't get to be selective about that the way that President Trump was on his Twitter account.
So when a politician does violate these tenets of First Amendment rights, what comes of that? Obviously, we're not throwing politicians in jail.
Yeah, and nor should we. And I don't think there's any claim for damages that you could bring. However, if you sue a politician for violating your First Amendment rights, you could bring a Section 1983 claim, which is a civil rights claim, assuming that you can convince the court that the politician was acting under the color of state law. You might at least get your attorney's fees back, which could be substantial. So my advice to elected officials is, if you're going to use your personal social media accounts to talk about the work you do as an elected official, don't block people, don't delete their comments, don't discriminate against their viewpoints by censoring them. If you don't like that, then don't use your social media account for any official purpose, and then this won't be an issue.
Just post photos from vacation and images of your dinner, like a lot of folks use social media for, and generally you'll be okay. Although, by the way, if you don't like what some of the people are saying on your public forum, you could mute them so you as the individual doesn't actually see them. So there are options there for those politicians who have incredibly thin skin and still have chosen to go, I guess, into politics. Ron McKenna, former Attorney General of the state of Washington, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rantz Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local, where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. And we start in the city of Tacoma, because despite an increase, an alarming increase in crime, violent crime, the department has decided to cut its Violent Crime Reduction Task Force. They've seen a 60% surge in drive-by shootings. They've seen the highest number of homicides they've seen in about a quarter century. And the violent crime unit is done for at the Tacoma Police Department because of a staffing shortage, one that is plaguing a lot of departments all across the country. Tacoma PD was down 31 full-time patrol positions as of March 1st of this year. And they've got budgetary restrictions that will prevent them from filling most of those spots. In fact, they can only fill 13 of those 31. 31, I would argue, they would likely argue, is already too many to have vacant in order to keep Tacoma as safe as possible. And obviously, the homicide rate, the gunshot instances, speaks to that. All of this, every single piece of this, is tied directly to the defund movement and the BLM movement. Do you think right now, or really in the last year, there is political will to fund the Tacoma Police Department, to fully fund it to where it needs to be? No. You don't have politicians who would ever take that kind of position. You definitely don't have a mayor who will take that position, because it might upset the delicate sensibilities of the activists in the community. The BLM activists, the Antifa thugs, the radicals, the agitators. Despite the fact that I think if you were to ask your average person, given the crime surge, would they back enough of a budgetary push to fund the Violent Crime Reduction Task Force? I'm willing to bet they would say yes. It's all about the framing. Because I know that there was a survey 4 months ago, 6 months, I can't remember, several months ago, that said, hey, the people in Tacoma actually support cutting the police budget. How'd you ask that question? The defund movement doesn't just villainize police. It doesn't just push police officers out of departments. What it ends up doing is creating an environment where bad guys feel emboldened, empowered. At the same time, you've got Democratic policies all across this region that are pushing people, keeping people out of prison. Now, the good news is, in Pierce County, you have Mary Robnett in the prosecutor's office, who I think is pretty damn good. But you're still having these people operate within a system that loathes police officers. So even at that 13 that they could fill of the 31 full-time patrol positions, I wonder how hard of a time they're going to have filling it. Who would want to work in an environment like that? Meanwhile, the Skagit Valley Tulip Festival is in full swing.
Yay!
This is the place you go to when you've essentially given up on your marriage and you're at the point where you just say, yeah, whatever, I'll do whatever you want. That's what you tell your spouse. You've just given up. It's also that time where you've officially gone from that young, cool, adventurous couple into that couple. That marriage. This is that time where you decide to go to the Tulip Festival. Other than that, I hope it's a wild success. I wish them nothing but the best.
I like the Tulip Festival.
I know you do.
It's a great place. It reminds me of happiness and pretty colors.
There are certainly people who hold that position. They tend to be older or have brain rot from putting lots of gel in their hair.
Thank you. Beyond that,
it's so boring. I don't understand it. I guess I understand going for 17 seconds, but you have to drive all the way there. I suppose it depends on where you live. If you live in Mount Vernon, a little bit different than if you were to live in Newcastle.
No,
or Puyallup.
It's nice. You make a day out of it. You go get some beer or some wine. Jason, you just
so you have to be drunk to enjoy it.
You don't like happiness. You're biased.
Well, then, no, I don't like other people's happiness.
Or
I
your
like
own.
My, oh no,
no
I like
don't.
My own.
You're
no,
self-loathing.
Yeah, I don't like happiness. So the weather, it turns out, has not been so great for the tulips. So a lot of them haven't fully blossomed yet, or bloomed, or whatever the term is for tulips. However, the weather is starting to change. Thus, it's supposed to get a lot better. And there's this piece in the Bellingham Herald, and it says, what should people do if they want to see tulips at their blooming best, with hundreds of acres of color to dazzle the eyes? And it spoke to Cindy Verge, who's the festival's executive director. She said, wait a bit to come. Which probably, I feel like that's not the best, because what if they wait too long?
Yeah, you got to be an expert tulip watcher.
Ugh, this whole idea of tulip watching just sounds awful. That's literally in the title of the piece, which is why I clicked on it, just so I can make fun of it. Tulip watching?
Tulips, Jason.
That's just like paint drying. You're just watching paint dry.
It's massively exciting.
Generally, when we have a season like this one, the blooms tend to concentrate with the early, mid, and late blooming tulips all blooming together, making for a wonderful peak blooming season. So that doesn't sound like you're supposed to wait. Right? I don't understand that. Andrew Miller is a partner over at Tulip Town, who I think was on the show.
Was it him? I remember we talked to somebody from Tulip Town.
Someone with tulips. Something with tulips in its name.
I'll find it.
Well, he says there's a strategy when they designed their tulip field.
So this year, you know, we designed the field last year for Instagram, frankly. Okay. You know, we knew when we came out that we wanted to share. People love to get pictures, and that's what we designed the field for. This year, we designed it for Instagram and social distancing. And so we went from a five-acre block of color that you kind of walk the track around, you know, quarter-mile track, to about a mile and a half of trails and tracks within the field. And so the surface area of being able to squat down and take a picture is that much more without having other people in your picture.
I had a thought that some people might find offensive, so please.
Take offense?
Well, take it for the spirit in which it intends to be.
Okay, I'm bracing myself for impact.
You know how we talk about toxic whiteness?
Yes.
Is that this?
Is going to a tulip festival? And
is that what they're talking about?
Posting it on Instagram. And
do people of color go to tulip festivals the same way that white people flock to the tulip festival?
Yeah, don't tell
you're an exception, obviously, but people don't know what you are.
Don't tell the UW kid about this tulip field, or else he's going to have a whole new article to write about.
I do feel like I'm surprised no one's gone after this.
Everything's going to get canceled at some point.
For no real reason.
It's inevitable.
Oh my gosh. And then finally, a 72-year-old woman is charged with a hate crime in Shoreline. Court documents say Jan Myers, who was white, she was driving her car up and down the road in front of her home, whose neighbor happens to be, her neighbor happens to be Vietnamese. She's accused of yelling racial slurs and violent threats against this neighbor. Someone else in the neighborhood told Cairo 7 TV that Jan Myers has caused trouble before, and this is just the latest.
Everybody just wanted to put our foot down and say, like, no, enough is enough. I hope that she faces justice.
So the story doesn't actually tell us what the crime is. It had to have been more than just a racial slur. I seem to recall in a different report that she was, like, revving her engine in a menacing way. I don't know what the crime is, but just we'll go with it being a crime. It's obviously not a violent crime. Should this count in the anti-Asian hate crimes?
Yes.
Why?
100%.
Tell me why.
It's one of the ones that we can actually say. All the other ones you debunk. Why do we got to debunk everyone?
I'm not debunking it. I'm saying the narrative of anti-Asian hate crimes has been violence, right?
Yes.
And it's serious, including, by the way, the ones that aren't hate crimes, but violence. We're all sort of, as a narrative, the media is sort of lumping that in together. And when they give the numbers at the end of the day, that's what they're saying. Should this count as part of that that number? It's obviously a different narrative. It's obviously still a hate crime according to the charges, and it should be treated as such. But the difference is, the narrative is more about the violent part. And if you count this as part of the violence issue, it comes back to my big concern with this movement, which is you're now pretending that this was a violent episode for you to feel uncomfortable walking to your car at the end of your shift.
Well,
that's all I mean.
It's verbally violent, you know? She's throwing slurs around.
Words are not violence.
Words?
Okay? Stop that.
Yeah, that whole sticks and stones thing?
It is rude. It is hateful. All of those things are true. It's not violent.
Those
words are not violent.
Can throw haymakers.
Oh, shut up.
What? Jan's lucky she's not my neighbor. Otherwise, she'd be catching a pair of hands.
The other thing is, at some age, don't you kind of expect just like some level of just... She probably talks about all people this way.
Probably. And like, she probably feels immune. She's like, I'm 72. Nobody's going to do anything to me.
Okay, here's the other thing. Let us assume, for the sake of this argument, she's 100% guilty. Because obviously she's just been charged. Let's just assume guilt. What do you do with the 72-year-old? It's a nonviolent crime. What do people think is going to happen? She's not doing any jail time.
Why not? Lock her up.
Where are you going to throw her? Where are you going to put her?
The women's prison.
In Yakima, you're going to throw her. What are you going to do? She's not going to jail. There was no violence here. She's not even in jail right now. She's been charged and released.
I want her to apologize publicly and in an embarrassing way.
Put a sign, like, have one of those sandwich signs. I hate Asians in the back. I'm sorry. What is she supposed to do?
Somebody. That's why they.
I ask this question because I do think that there needs to be some
repercussions.
There has to be a repercussion, but it's not going to be satisfying to anybody.
This is why judges get paid the big bucks, is they have to figure this out.
I mean, she's going to settle. She's going to plead down. My guess is 72. What are you going to do with her?
I'm going to go hang out in Shoreline, wait for Jan to attack me. I want to be the next victim.
You are the victim. Look in the mirror. Look at what you did to your hair today.
That's six times.
Look at all that gel. It's just, it's crusty and disgusting.
Six times.
Do we not pay you anything?
You don't.
Do I have to get you, like, quality product to put in your hair? Because I'm just disgusted.
A paycheck would just
on
be great.
On this show, in this studio, in this building, we don't wear gel. No one puts gel in their hair. You have respect for your hair. You have respect for a fade, period. I don't care what they do on other shows. You go ahead and let producer Alex on Todd's show put whatever he doesn't put anything in his hair. You let producer Jacob from Tom, he also doesn't put anything in his hair. No one here cares about their hair. This is the show that cares more about its hair than anything else. We don't put gel in our hair. That is a rule.
Does that only count as one time that you brought it up?
We don't have many rules. We have one rule. Two rules. Don't make eye contact with me. But number two, don't put gel in your hair. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I'll write those down.
Put that in the rule book, but put that at the top.
I can't move things. They're in writing.
You put it 1A. Just put it at the top. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We're live on AM770 KTTH. The Union hopes and progressive dreams were dashed when Alabama workers, Amazon workers in Alabama, were all like, yeah, I'm a pass on that whole unionizing thing. I'm a hard pass. Despite all the politicians, despite all of the celebrities pushing them to unionize, they were all like, nah, we're good. The union now plans to challenge 505 ballots, and they are filing a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, which I'm sure won't be framed as attempting to overturn an election. Which, by the way, even if they, let's just assume those 505 votes were overturned, the vote tally opposing the union would still be higher. Michael Foster is a lead organizer with the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. He said, they're not done fighting.
Just because you feel like you have won this battle that the war is not over with. By no means necessary that this war is over with. This battle has just begun.
Oh, I know. I think Amazon knows that. They know what they're up against. Union interests. Unions are not doing well. They're dying slowly. They're bleeding members because it turns out when you tell members they don't actually have to stay in the unions, guess what happens? They leave the unions. Some unions are important, there's no doubt. And it's not to say that unions don't provide some worthy protections when protections are necessary. And certainly there's something to be said about the amount of perks they're able to negotiate in contracts. There is reason why unions were powerful, they started to lose their members' interests when they decided to get so overtly political. They made that decision. And in this case, the reason why they're going after Amazon is twofold. Yes, there's no doubt about it that they want more people to join the union so they can get more union dues. And they see Amazon and their 900,000 plus members, right, employees, many of whom they think that they'd be able to unionize. And so they started in Alabama. They put on a lot of pressure, and it failed. It failed very easily for one reason. It wasn't an organic movement. The folks who were working at the warehouse in Alabama, they weren't calling for this. They had no interest in this. They didn't demand this. Union interests did, and they were driven by ideology. They were driven by politics. Politics that want to destroy Amazon, hurt Amazon. It's too big. They don't like it. And for all of Amazon's faults, and they have a lot, workers generally don't want to destroy their place of business. They generally don't want to see it done, or have harm done to it, generally. Because they understand that they work there. And if they hurt the business, they'll be out of a job. Now, the reaction to this news is kind of interesting to me. Stuart Applebaum, for example, he's the president of the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. He basically is saying the reason why the union interests lost this election to unionize was because the workers are just too stupid and gullible, which is probably not the best messaging for a union to hold.
Amazon misled and manipulated workers. They lied and tried to game the system. Not only did they take full advantage of our terrible labor laws, we contend that they broke the law repeatedly.
Oh, well, repeatedly.
In their no holds barred effort to stop workers from forming a union.
Okay. They don't want to form a union. This is the equivalent of constantly asking the same person out because you're really attracted to them and they're just not that into you.
Good movie.
Right? And they just keep telling you kind of, they beat around the bush a little bit, right? They're like, oh, it sounds good. I'm just a little bit busy. I can't do, my former roommates from college are in town. We're going to hang out. Oh my gosh, I would have, but my kid's a little under the weather. I gotta stay just to take care of him. Oh, COVID, I can't go out, can't be seen. And then finally, they're all like, look, I don't want to break your heart here. The amount of gel you put in your hair is just too much. You're just not my type. And this is just a hard pass. I'm just not into you, union. And then the union, dejected, crusty hair all over the place, says, you're just being convinced by a friend not to date me. And so they're going to try again, which is just kind of desperate and sad.
That was good.
I know. Don't I know it? It's the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. One more hour coming up.